Tank from New Jersey. It's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull. And I gotta say, right off the bat, I don't like how hard you hit that B, Darren.
What?
You were like, it's the SNL. It's just, I don't know.
But
it seems very WNBC.
Oh, but I did that for you because this is your birthday episode. I wanted to put in a little pizzazz.
Oh, and that's where you put in the pizzazz on the word the least exciting word in the name of our wonderfully underlooked podcast.
Yeah,
Overlooked.
There it is.
There we go.
Yeah. You put it under the, because like anybody can do the emphasis on the SNL and or the nerds. If you really care, you'll put it on the.
The real ones emphasize the V. Okay.
Yeah, real ones.
Are there
ones,
like off-brand SNL nerds podcasts out there?
Not if I have anything to say about it.
Okay.
I will put that.
See,
shit to
I don't
rest.
Know because I don't pay much attention to the rest of the SNL podcast sphere, and it's not really anything against any of the other podcasts. I'm sure they're delightful, or maybe they're awful. I just don't know because it's like, you know, I talk about SNL and SNL related stuff here, about, you know, for about an hour and a half every week. And that's really enough. You know, that kind of sates my SNL itch, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it. You do what you got to do on these microphones. And then you just, when it's done, you put it away and you go live your life. Nothing wrong with that.
You know, I have other interests.
Yeah.
I'm a well-rounded person.
You got comic books. You got Batman. And... Yes.
And, those are two distinct interests, by the way. Comic books and Batman. Yes,
you got your James Bond, and and you got Elvis Costello, and you got Sherlock Holmes. Segue into the movie we're talking about.
Nicely done, sir. Nicely done. Yes.
Nice.
Yes. Because this is my birthday episode, August 1st. We're recording this before August 1st. You'll be hearing it after, because we're recording ahead for much of this summer. So, So I got to pick the movie. Unlike the other weeks where it's all Darren.
That's right. I allow him to have the movie of his choice.
He makes me pick the movie once a year. So this year I decided to do Zero Effect, which is sort of an old favorite of mine. Have you seen this movie before? I can't remember if you've watched this one before or not.
I remember seeing it before. I don't remember if I saw it in the theaters or at home. Because, like, I remember seeing the trailers for it and, like, oh, this looks kind of good. And also, because at the time, you know, this movie has Ben Stiller in it. And I was a huge Ben Stiller fan at the time. I loved the Ben Stiller show on MTV and on Fox. So I was, like, all about. So, like, once I saw he was in this, I was like, oh, this movie looks great. And I feel like this movie is kind of lost to time, though, because... Yeah, like when you bring up this movie to a lot of people, I feel like a lot of people don't remember it or even know about it or anything.
I feel like it has fallen down the memory hole a little bit. I don't think it's even out on Blu-ray. I think it's only come out on DVD. And I was looking for it streaming. Couldn't find it anywhere streaming. I had to end up buying it or renting it on the YouTubes.
What?
Yeah. Okay. Wild, right?
Yeah, I mean this, but also, I mean, I remember when this movie came out. I'll give a little background. So, yeah, this movie came out January 30th, 1998. Had a budget of $5 million, only grossed $2 million. And yeah, I remember when this movie came out. It didn't do very well. Like, even though it got good reviews, Cecil and Ebert gave it 2 thumbs up, way up.
Oh. Yeah. You love it when they give them way up, when the thumbs are hoisted up even higher.
Thumb goes all the way up there.
That's right. And,
Oh, that sounded wrong. Oh, no. But yeah, but like, but aside from that, like, yeah, it did. I know it didn't generate a lot of buzz. I don't know a lot of people that saw it or even, knew about it.
I missed it in theaters. I'm pretty sure I didn't see it until like maybe a few years later when it came out on DVD. So. But it's really grown on me over the years, so I really like it, especially because it does have this Sherlock Holmes connection, which we'll get into. But Yeah, it's interesting. It's got Bill Pullman as this eccentric private detective, Daryl Zero, and Ben Stiller as his aide partner, Steve Arlo, who's sort of like the Dr. Watson figure of this movie.
Yeah. I mean, so, it's not a huge cast. It's like five or six people in this thing at the who have speaking lines, basically.
Yeah, who have major parts. That's true.
Major parts,
that's
yeah.
True. Yeah.
But yeah, this film was written and directed by Jake Kasdan. This was the first movie
his debut
film. Of course, he would go on to do a couple of movies we've talked about in this podcast, Orange County, and of course the cinematic achievement, the zenith that is Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story.
Walk Hard. Oh. Love that movie. So underrated. So underappreciated.
Super underrated.
We waxed rhapsodic about it on this podcast a few years ago, and whenever it's come up since.
Yes, I'm pretty sure we've made a Walk Hard reference at least in like every other episode we've done.
At least, you know, probably not 6 months have gone by on this podcast that we've not brought up Walk Hard
at some
point and just thoroughly recommended it to everyone who's in the sound of our voice.
Exactly. So, I tell everyone who will listen that you got to love your Negro man.
That's a bit I cannot quote from that movie.
It's a funny scene.
That is a very funny scene. I've got it's been too long since I don't think I've watched Walk Hard since we did it for the podcast a few years ago. So I'm certainly due for a rewatch.
Yeah. So, get out of here, John. You don't want no part of this shit.
I kind of think I want to do it. And Jake Kasdan, he's done other stuff since. He's done Bad Teacher. He's did Sex Tape. He's done a ton of Jumanji movies. That seems to be half of his career now. But it all started with this, with Zero Effect in 1998 with Bill Pullman and Ben Stiller and doing a Sherlock Holmes pastiche. It's just offbeat thing for your first feature.
Yeah. Cause when I first saw, I remember seeing the trailers for this. Mm-hmm. I was kind of confused. I was like, oh, is this like based off of anything? Is this based off of a book or a graphic novel? Cause who is this Daryl Zero character? Just an original thing. And it turns out it is sort of based on a book in a roundabout way.
Yeah, kind of. They didn't really publicize the connection. I that may have been part of what made me seek it out, was I think I read that it had a Sherlock Holmes. I can't remember, honestly, if I realized the Sherlock Holmes connection myself or if I heard about it and then saw it or if I saw it and then read about it. I don't know. It's all just in a jumble in my head. So, but this movie, it's, I would say, partially inspired by one of the classic Sherlock Holmes stories, A Scandal in Bohemia, which if you're a Sherlock Holmes fan, that's the story that introduced the character of Irene Adler, who is a woman who actually outwits Sherlock Holmes.
Ooh, the woman.
And he calls her the woman as like an honorific. And you might remember in the recent Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock series, that's one of the stories that they adapted and modernized into A Scandal in Belgravia, and they had Irene Adler in that. So it's very interesting, especially if you've seen the Sherlock episode. You see like sort of another take on modernizing that story to the then present day of 1998.
Well, the present day, after watching this movie again, I was like, oh, this. Mm-hmm. I really wish this movie, more people knew about this movie. It's a solid film. It's like a solid
mystery. Yeah.
It's a solid mystery. I read up on it and I saw that like Jake Kasdan was like kind of trying to get this and make it into a TV series for a little bit. Like
there's a pilot episode. It's still on YouTube, I believe. And they had
Alan Cumming.
Alan Cumming as Daryl Zero. And yeah, and it's okay. It doesn't quite work. I haven't watched the pilot recently, but I've watched it a couple of times. And I remember Alan Cumming playing Daryl Zero a lot more manic than Bill Pullman did.
Mm.
And Bill Pullman also in this movie, he gets to show like more shades of the character, I think.
So, yeah. I did enjoy Bill Pullman's like portrayal of this character. Cause like, mm-hmm. I mean, it could, like, you could have fallen easily into the trap of, oh, this guy is like a wacky weirdo recluse. And he's like you said, like manic and everything. But like he plays it. He doesn't play it as big as that. It's a little bit more subtle with his mannerisms and everything. And I do and everything. Like that. Yeah, I thought that was great.
It's a tricky thing because he has to be somebody that the characters, specifically like Steve Arlo, Ben Stiller's character, Ben Stiller has to find him annoying, but it's nice when it doesn't cross over into the audience finding him annoying, because like if you're finding your main character actively repellent, that's bad.
Yeah. That's it's Pat the movie.
Yeah, exactly. And the movie starts out in an interesting way. We've got Steve Arlo and he's meeting with a potential client played by Ryan O'Neill. He's playing a fellow named Gregory Stark.
No relation to Tony.
No relation to Tony, but he's also like a very well-off guy.
Oh, so maybe there is a relation.
Maybe. Ooh. He does have lots of money to toss around. He's, you know, he offers up quite a substantial bribe at one point.
Oh.
Maybe.
Watch out for the Winter Soldier.
Yeah. it's interesting because we kind of cross-cut between Ben Stiller as Steve Arlo talking up how great and what a genius Daryl Zero is. And they intercut that with him sort of unloading to a friend of his about how weird and irritating Daryl Zero is to work for. So it's a neat contrast, and it really sets up the character in a neat way.
Yeah.
And there's a neat thing. This was a trick that they used a lot in the Sherlock Holmes stories by Arthur Conan Doyle, was they would have like these tantalizing references to these cases you never saw. And you just be like, oh, the giant rat of Sumatra. What's that all about? What's this? And Arlo tells this story early on to just kind of establish Daryl's bona fides. And he says, like, let me tell you about the case of the man with the mismatched shoelaces. This was many years ago when I first came into his employ. He was contracted to find a man. I'm afraid I can't give much in the way of detail, but believe me when I say that if this man had not been located, our country's good diplomacy with a certain economic superpower might have a distinctly different face today. Federal, state, local authorities all over the world were searching around the clock for a face whose significance they couldn't fathom. He vanished without a trace. On the 8th morning of the search, I was contacted by a non-political third party with an unrelated private agenda. Prior to this day, my employer had never heard of this missing man, knew nothing about him. After just 1 hour of desk work, just an hour after accepting the case, he picked up the telephone and placed a call. Guess who answered the phone? The missing man. Ooh. The man with the mismatched shoelaces, without ever leaving the house. So, you know, that right there tells you like what an amazing detective Daryl Zero is.
Right. And then it's like you said, then it cuts immediately to Arlo at a bar unloading to a friend about what a freak and a weirdo Zero is. It's like he has no social skills. He's a complete freak, no social life. But he does say, like, when he's working, he is the best. Like, he has this thing where when he's on the job, he can be in control and he can be, like, the smoothest operator there is. But when he's not, he can't even get his own dry cleaning.
Yeah, he's afraid to go to the dry cleaners. He's tactless. He's inept. And yeah, he just describes him as the brilliant and the mysterious and brilliant Daryl Zero. And they take the case for Gregory Stark. Gregory Stark, he's missing his keys. He lost his keys about a year ago. And among the keys is a key to a safety deposit box. But he doesn't want to say where the safety deposit box is or what's in it. He just wants them to find the key.
Because he's being blackmailed.
He's being blackmailed, yes.
Yeah.
He's making these $100,000 payments like every few months. But they're increasing in frequency now.
Exactly. So Arlo goes back to L.A. Mm-hmm. where Zero is at. Yeah, so Arlo... Yeah,
the client's in Portland.
In Portland, yeah.
I don't think I mentioned that.
Yeah, so the movie takes place between Portland and L.A.
Yeah, so, mostly shot in Portland, interestingly.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Mm. Yeah, so Arlo goes back to see Zero, and, you know, his apartment is on the penthouse floor. And then he has to go through all of these. It's almost like the opening of Get Smart, where he has to go through all these doors just to get through Zero. There's, like, this one big metal door that, like, self-opened, and then, like, it gets stuck. So Arlo has to, like, kick it open and be like, God damn it, and, like, kick it. Then he has to open, like, five padlocks on a door and punch in a key code just to get in to see him. He sees, like, the fridge is full of Tab soda. Remember Tab, kids?
Yeah.
Delicious. And
you want a tab, you're going to have to pay for something.
Oh, God. Oh, hilarious.
And Daryl Zero has been up for 3 days because he's been taking amphetamines.
As you do.
Instead of, like, cocaine, Daryl Zero takes amphetamines. And he's been, like, eating tuna fish and Tab soda. So,
yeah, you know.
Breakfast of champions.
That's right. It's got all the iron and vitamins you need.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then Arlo tells him about the meeting in Portland, Gregory Stark. Daryl already knows, that he's, like, the head of Oregon Timber. He's a very rich man, probably got into embezzling. I think they also mentioned that a rival detective, Clearburg, was trying to get on his case, but he wasn't able to do it. And, of course, Zero really angry about, hates Clearburg because he has no tact.
Yeah.
But we never see Clearburg. It's just like a name.
No, it's just this tantalizing reference that just gives you the feeling that these characters live a life outside of this one story. So,
yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But fleshing out the world. I like it. World building, as you say. Zero agrees to take the case, but he needs Arlo to take him to the airport tonight to go to Portland. Arlo kind of doesn't want to do that because he wants to take his girl out on a date, his girl, Jess.
Yeah.
You know, who they've moved in together, and they're living together in a super nice house. Holy moly.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that house. I was like, whoa, this is... This must pay well. And it's like they have a pool and everything, and so Arlo has to tell Jess, like, I have to drive him to the airport, and Jess is very upset because it seems like Arlo's relationship with Daryl is kind of not the best one.
They've been together for like a few years, and Arlo's just getting fed up with the whole situation just because. Yeah, Daryl's a very trying guy to work for.
Yes.
and we see several examples of that during the film.
Yeah, like when they drive to the airport and he gives him the skinny about the whole case, about how Stark had been paying off these guys at drop-off spots and everything. Zero will say something like, I think you moved in with your girlfriend just a bit prematurely.
Yeah.
He's like, what?
Just his unsolicited opinion. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, you know, not the most tactful of fellows.
New.
Yeah. So the Zero gets on a plane, rents a car, has different IDs and identities, constantly lying to people about who he is. Cause he's a bit paranoid about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But he's also said that he does that cause it makes him the best at what he does. He's very good at objectivity and observation.
The two ops.
And he needs to remain objective and detached in order to be good at what he does.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, very, very Holmesian.
Very much so.
Regard. Yeah. So, so Zero takes a case. He goes to Portland and he's going undercover. Cause Stark has no idea what Daryl Zero looks like. So Zero, it goes to Stark's gym, and he's like using the treadmill next to him. And we see he tries to like start up a conversation. He's like, oh, hey, well, what speed are you running at? Are you on an 8? And Stark goes, oh, no, a 7. And that kind of comes into play later. He kind of gets a feel for Stark.
Yeah.
And he later says, like, yeah, I was matching his pace and I was at a 5. So when I asked him, are you running at an 8? He lied and said he was at a 7 rather than admit that he was 3 levels below to a total stranger.
Right.
And he also finds out that he has like this regular massage from a redheaded masseuse. Hey, Stark seems to have a thing for redheads for some reason.
Oh, and that gets answered later on in the as well.
Yeah.
It all comes together.
And Daryl also, like, while he's doing this reconnaissance, he also meets a woman at the gym. And we see his observational skills in action again, where he, like, deduces that she's a paramedic. Right. And her name is Gloria Sullivan, and she will be very important later on.
Yeah, because she even said, like, oh, you're right. How did you guess that? And then, like, instead of answering, he gets kind of flustered and loses his cool a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that already establishes, like, oh, this woman is throwing our hero off his game.
Yeah. And he also, like, another thing is, like, he introduces himself to Stark as Nick Carmine.
Yes.
But, like, later when they're in the changing room together, Stark doesn't remember his name. So that, like, kind of shows. And he also has a deduction, like, oh, he's cut himself shaving 3 times in the last 10 days. He's very distracted by this blackmail stuff. Yeah, so he's got a lot going on.
Yeah, yeah. No, it shows he's very, like, even though Daryl has a lot of quirks and eccentricities? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eccentricities.
That word. He is very good at his job, and he is very astute, and he's not, you know, he's not a total complete boob when it comes to detective work.
This is true. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So coming up next is the scene that I kind of liked, where it might be one of my favorite scenes, where Arlo is meeting up with Zero at the airport, and then Zero's like in a disguise, and he has he has like a big beard, like aviator sunglasses. Kind of looks like a young Michael McDonald or something. Mm-hmm. And he says, "Oh, meet me by the phone booth at the end of the hallway." And then so he talks to him through a payphone,
right?
Even though like he could have talked to him face to face.
They are like 2 payphones apart.
Exactly.
and you know, at one point, Arlo is just like, why are we talking on a payphone? We could just like talk like human beings. And he's like, I don't know. 2 guys in an airport talking. It's a little fishy.
That is my favorite line. I like that.
And yeah, it's very funny. I remember that gag was in the trailers. And as another example of Daryl Zero's eccentricities, he tells Arlo to immediately go back to L.A. to check on something in the computer. And he's like, wait, I just flew all the way to Portland just for us to have this conversation over a payphone. And you're telling me to go back to L.A. right
now. Yeah. And then, at this point, Zero says, oh, no, don't call me by my name. I'm going by Sergio. Sergio Knight.
Yes.
Pretty great name.
Pretty great fake name. Yeah. Stark is doing another, he has to do another blackmail drop off, and he has to go through this like long convoluted route through the city, like, you know, drive to here, when your mileage says this, pull over and get on the bus and, you know, take the bus to this stop and then go to this museum and then go into the first men's room you see, go to the last stall, drop off the money there. And you know, it's this very complex thing to prevent him being followed. Daryl says, you know, the thing, people can't tell they're being followed if you get there first. So Daryl is already there in the men's room when Stark is there dropping off the money.
See, I was trying to figure out how he knew where he'd be. But is that because, like, they kind of went through his emails earlier?
I think maybe because they got the letter. Yeah, like Stark turns over all the blackmail letters to them, except one, as we find out later, that has like a very significant clue in it.
The KV.
I think that was it, but maybe he figured it out in some other brilliant way. There are some times where we don't quite know the chain of reasoning. We just know, oh, well, this person's really smart, so they figured it out.
Yeah. So. Okay. So, yeah, so we see Stark going into one of the bathroom stalls as instructed and leaving the money in the toilet tank.
Right.
And the instructions tell him, leave the money in the toilet tank, and then on your way out, trip the fire alarm and just keep moving. So he does that, trips the fire alarm. Everybody evacuates the building except for Daryl, who just kind of waits in the lobby. Apparently no one tells him he's got to get out of there. So
he just observes who's like lurking around. He wants to see who goes into the men's room to collect the money. And when the paramedics arrive, he sees the woman that he met at the gym, Gloria Sullivan, and she goes in there and she grabs the bag from the men's room and she like sneaks it out in one of her, in some of her paramedic gear.
Yes. So she's already, so he's already on to her.
Yep.
So Arlo lands back in Portland. He goes to the hotel and he gets a letter at the front desk from Zero saying that Zero has now gone back to L.A. and he'll be back in the morning.
Right.
Wait for him there.
Yeah. And we also have another sort of framing device in this movie is Daryl Zero is writing his own memoirs.
Like, yes.
Dissecting his methods. And he talks about, you know, that's where he talks about like objectivity and observation, the two obs. And he's talks about how research is an art, not a science. And for every crime, there's a motive. And for every motive, there's a passion. So, you know, passion is like a big thing that he has to figure out. But he can't succumb to passion himself because then he sacrifices his objectivity.
See, it's layers, man. Layers.
Layers. It's so complex, man.
I know. So, so now Zero goes back, does some research, goes back to Portland, follows Gloria around, follows her to a senior disabled facility. And then he meets up with Gloria again at the gym that they met up at. And and then she asks him again, how'd you know I was a paramedic? And he says he could smell the iodine. And and then they start up a conversation about her job and her work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, says her job can be pretty thrilling at times, but it's also kind of boring. And then Zero says, like, he's in town for the accountant conference and that he's an accountant now.
I think he kind of lets her assume that. I think he says, I'm in town for the conference. And she was like, the big accountants conference. And he's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think he kind of just lets her assume that.
Right.
Because that kind of trips him up later. Because there's the woman who's they turn the towels into at the gym. She's like kind of trying to set them up. She's like, oh, hey, you know, he's single. You should ask him out. And later on Gloria thinking that he's an accountant kind of trips him up a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. You know, you're right. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. And meanwhile, they're doing research into Stark, to Gregory Stark. And they find out he wrote this horrible poem in college called An Ode to Clarissa, which has a very bad rhyme. He rhymes. What does he rhyme with birds?
Towards.
He rhymes towards and birds, and they're like, doesn't rhyme. Doesn't rhyme. And
it really doesn't.
And later, like, when Arlo meets with Stark or something, he's like, so how do you say the word towards? And he's like, towards. And those things that fly around in the sky, what do you call them? Birds? Yeah, they don't rhyme.
Anyway.
They're just fixated on the fact that it's a bad rhyme in this poem that he wrote in college.
I mean, in their defense, that is a pretty terrible rhyme.
It is a bad rhyme, yeah. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, they're researching Gloria. She's a good citizen with no criminal record. So they can't really figure out why she would be blackmailing this guy. What's her motive?
Right.
And Stark is not forthcoming with details because he doesn't say what's in the safety deposit box or where it is. So, yeah.
Right. So, and even at this point, Arlo's like, all right, so we have a name. We know who's been doing it. We're done here, right? We just tell Stark the name and we're done. But Daryl's like, no. I want to see what her deal is. Like, you know, she's a very cool customer and she's intensity about her. And she's also very charming, which, of course, Arlo's like, charming.
Oh, charming. Oh, where's this coming from? Oh, what's going on here?
Ooh, what's this? Well, young Mr. Zero in love.
Yeah.
Ooh.
The frost is sort of melting. Yeah. So Yeah, so Daryl Zero, he does some more research, and he has another one of my favorite quotes in the movie where he's like, so on looking for things, you know, when you're looking for a specific thing, your odds of finding it are very low because of all the things in the world, you're only looking for one thing. But if you go looking for anything at all, your chances of finding it are very good because of all the things in the world, you're sure to come across at least some of them.
It sounds like gibberish, but it does make sense.
You can't argue with that logic. You can't.
I found something.
Yeah.
It sounds logic. You can't deny it.
Yeah. So they find a letter. I think this was like the one letter that Stark didn't turn over to them.
Right.
And it says, they find a letter and it's mentioning a boxer named Cragen Vincent. Right. And they're like, we can't find any record of a Cragen Vincent.
Right, because it's like you say, because Daryl Zero kind of broke into, not kind of, he did, break into Greg Stark's office and was just like looking around for everything. And not only did they find who the KV was, Cragen Vincent, he also found Stark's keys.
Yeah.
They were in the sofa, under the cushions.
They were in the sofa, yeah.
I was like, what the fuck?
And they're discussing this, and Arlo's like, wait, so he just lost his keys? They don't have anything to do with the blackmail? And Zero's like, no, apparently not. He just lost his keys and didn't find them for a year.
And wow.
The blackmail just happened to start up around that time. So,
wow.
So Gloria Sullivan doesn't know anything about the keys. So,
just a coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah. So meanwhile, Gloria comes across Daryl Zero in the gym again, undercover as Nick Carmine.
Mm-hmm.
And she thinks he's an accountant still. So she says, hey, I know this is like a big ask, but could you maybe help me with my tax returns?
Right. And of course, he has no idea how to do that. So he calls.
Yeah. Because it's never come up.
Yeah. It's just never come up.
He's never had to do taxes before, apparently.
Yeah. So wait, has he never done his own? Well, maybe he had people do his taxes for him, I guess.
I guess he would. Yeah.
I mean, I hate to think he was like a tax cheat or something.
Yeah. Maybe he's somehow gotten away without it or something. I don't know. Yeah,
he's Wesley Snipesing it.
Yeah. He just says, you know, well, yeah, it's never come up. Yep. And so there's a funny scene where, Ben Stiller's at the pool with his girlfriend. Who seems to just like spend like her life by the pool. I think in like two out of the three scenes we see her and she's at the pool.
Yeah.
They're just like, you know, by the pool, making out. And then Daryl Zero calls him up and he's like, how do you do taxes?
Some people have Siri. Daryl has Arlo.
That's right. So Daryl goes over to Gloria's apartment to help her out with her taxes. And she asks him about the Corrodium 3 deduction.
Ooh.
And he kind of makes something up that sounds sort of convincing. He's like, oh, yeah, that's the most misunderstood deduction in the book. And he just like makes up something that sounds kind of convincing. And she seems to buy it.
Yeah, he was really just flying by the seat of his pants on that one.
So he's, you know, just so much bullshit. Flowing
so much.
Yeah, but I think that maybe is hinting that like that's her first, maybe one of her first clues that he's really not what he says he is.
Right.
I feel like she's asking him that to try and draw him out. Like maybe a real accountant would have been like, what are you talking about? There is no Corrodium 3 deduction. So I don't know. Right. I googled like Corrodium 3 deduction zero effect and I couldn't really find much of anything. So I don't know if that's a real thing or not. I'm inclined to think not.
Okay. Yeah, I think they made it up. I don't know. I take my shit to H&R Block. I have no idea what any of this shit means.
Well, you know, I read on the IMDb trivia that there's like a thing about the full size bed, like trivia that Daryl uses in one of his deductions about a full size bed. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, yeah, the full size didn't exist in like, you know, before 1971. And like, it sounds very convincing, but it's all bullshit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been lied to. I don't know how to feel.
Yeah,
about that.
Yeah. But you've been lied to very convincingly. Is
so I don't feel betrayed as much as I do impressed.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Let me say, it says here, Zero's epic deduction regarding the origin of full-size mattresses is fictional. None of this is true. The film's art department did research to try and blend some truth into the mix, but nope, it's all a lie. And I think Jake Kasdan just outright admits that in the commentary.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow, Jake. Wow.
You know, look, if you can lie convincingly enough, people just buy it, man.
I guess so. I'm flummoxed right now.
Yeah.
Sorry. It's okay.
Sorry to shake your faith in the great Daryl Zero.
I don't know what to believe in anymore. Wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, so while he does the taxes, Gloria says, okay, you do this. I'm hope you don't mind. I'm tired. I'm just going to go take a nap, which while he works on his tax return, in my mind, I was like, well, you just met this guy. You're just going to take a nap while he does your taxes in your home?
I guess it just shows her level of comfort with him. Cause like later on, she's like, okay, I'm going to take a shower.
Yeah.
And it is kind of wild. But, where he's a near stranger and she just invites him into her apartment and it's like, I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to take a shower. I'm going to be like really vulnerable. And but
with her manic pixie haircut.
Yeah.
But
she likes him cause she like offers to make him dinner.
She offers to make him dinner while she goes to take a shower. So while she showers, Daryl kind of snoops around looking for clues and stuff. Finds a old black and white photo of Cragen on her nightstand. So the plot thickens, you see.
Yes, yeah. So she's got some sort of connection to Cragen. And meanwhile, we're cutting back to Arlo. Arlo agrees to retire if Jess marries him. So he like proposes to her and she's like, I will marry you if you finish with this whole Daryl Zero nonsense.
Jess really wants him to retire. And even he kind of wants to leave too, because I mean, at first he's a little resistant because he's like, oh, he kind of needs me. And then, Jess is like, well, who needs who? And then, the push I think he needed to be like, I kind of need to get away from him. So I will leave him if you will marry me.
Yeah.
And
meanwhile, Gloria and Daryl's evening kind of continues. And she's like, oh, I know what you need. And then we cut to them just like out in the woods. It's the dead of night now. And they're just like shooting. They're just shooting cans off a log, off a fence or something.
As you do.
And he's like, this is what you do whenever you're like tense and you need to unwind. She's like, yep.
Just shoot guns in the woods at night.
That's right. That's right. and she's a pretty good shot. And they're driving back and she's like, hey, look, it's really late. We're going to drive all the way back to my place. You'd have to drive all the way back to your hotel after that. Or I'd have to drive you back to your hotel. And she's like, why don't you just stay on my couch?
Oh,
for the night. So,
hey, now.
So he just like spends the night. So again, very trusting.
Very trusting.
Yeah.
Hey, person,
I just for like maybe a day.
Yeah, but things are moving pretty quickly here. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, where was okay?
So yeah, Daryl is sort of like reporting on this to Arlo the next day, and he's like, "Yeah, it's really interesting. I couldn't tell what she was thinking. He can't really get a read on this woman." And Arlo, I think, has done some more research on Cragen. And he finds out that he was serving a sentence for the murder of a Clarissa Devereaux.
Clarissa, in the poem song.
In the poem that Gregory Stark wrote. So he's like, you'll never guess what her name was. Clarissa.
Mm.
Yeah. How did you know that?
Wow.
Yeah. So,
I found out the Clarissa person was shot execution style. Everybody thinks that Cragen was working for somebody, but he won't talk. And he was kind of moved out of prison for medical reasons because he has an illness.
And she was shot in a motel room.
Yes, in a motel room. Yes.
And there were like all these clues. There were like fingerprints all over that pointed to Cragen. So they caught him like dead to rights. So they figure, and Cragen was moved to the medical facility, and it's the same medical facility where Gloria volunteers during her off time. So she knows Cragen, and she's like, they see her like wheeling him around. So, okay. So she has some evidence that ties Stark to the murder of Clarissa Devereaux.
Right. And then Zero follows her, and he makes a deduction that Cragen is her father.
Dun, dun, dun!
The plot thickens!
Yeah, yeah. So so they go to the hotel room where this murder took place, like, I don't know, 20, 30-odd years before, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Zero deduces that Cragen moved the bed in the hotel room.
Right.
And that's where the stuff about the full-size mattress and all that comes in.
Right. So, and yeah, so Arlo's like, well, why would he move a mattress, and why would he leave fingerprints all over the place like a sloppy amateur? And they're like, I don't know. It's not adding up. I need more info. And Zero tells Arlo to go talk to Stark about this. And, yeah, and that's when Arlo straight up asks Stark, like, hey, did you have a woman killed a while back? You remember that?
Yeah. And Stark kind of, he starts to come clean. He says, like, you know, he had this love affair with this older woman named Clarissa when he was in college. I think he was 18. She was like 25.
Yeah.
And then it came back to him. She was like accusing him of rape.
Ooh, yeah.
And you know, he's like, oh, this was going to destroy my whole future. I couldn't have that. So he hired this hitman, Cragen, to take her out of the picture.
Yeah. Lee said, like, I would take care of your problem for $5,000.
Yeah.
And then Arlo's asking, well, what's in the safe deposit box? This albatross over your head. And he said there's a tape that he recorded of me talking to him, ordering him to take out the hit, to do the hit on Clarissa. And like,
so we have hard evidence that Gregory Stark is the guy behind Clarissa Devereaux's murder.
Right. But Stark Stark doesn't know where the security box, the safe deposit box is.
Right. Or even what name it's under.
Yeah, exactly. Because after Cragen got caught, a different man showed up to his house saying that Cragen expects him to bankroll his whole, you know, defense through like a middleman, and he also wants some money for his family. Then the man played him a copy of the tape that he has, and it's like, well, if you refuse to pay up, this goes out. And gives him the key to the safety deposit box, saying that if Cragen dies, or if he gets out, then we will let you know where the safe deposit box is. But until then, we're just going to hold on to that safe deposit box for safekeeping.
Right. So this has been hanging over Stark for all these years, like decades. And there's a great line of dialogue. He says, you can't buy silence. You can only rent it.
Mm. Which,
yeah, I love that.
Good line.
Another nice line from Daryl Zero. Not long after that, he says, passion is the enemy of precision.
Boss.
And they kind of like figured this out. And then around this time, Arlo tells Zero that he's quitting.
Zero does not take it well.
Does not take it well. There's tossed furniture. There's, you know, broken TVs.
Broken glass.
Yelling and screaming.
Yes.
Yeah.
Broken glass everywhere. People
pissing
on the steps. They just don't care.
And he's like, how can you do this? You're supposed to be with me against the bad guys. And Arlo's like, no, you don't understand, do you? I mean, there aren't any good guys. There's no evil guys and innocent guys. It's just a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's like, you know, the guy that we're working for murdered this woman. He hired someone to murder this woman. This is not a good guy that we're working for. Yes, he's being blackmailed, and that's bad, but this guy is no better, and it's probably substantially worse.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when I think Arlo is going out, and he's going to get together with his, I think, one of his law school buddies.
Bill.
And that's where we get the flashbacks from earlier where he's like sort of complaining about Zero to his friend Bill, you know, when Arlo's like really worked up. And we find out at this point in the film that this is right after he's told Daryl Zero he's going to quit. So right. when the case is done.
Absolutely. So, so at this point, Arlo leaves Zero to, you know, alone in the hotel room, and he goes to his car.
Just to stew.
And he goes to his car. Who should be at his car? Stark is there.
Yeah. Gregory Stark, who says, hey, if I walked into that hotel room right now, would I see Daryl Zero for myself? And Arlo's like, no, he's not in there. You wouldn't. What are you doing here? Why'd you follow me?
Right.
And Stark is like, I'm going to offer you a bribe of $1 million. To give me the name of the suspect.
Right. It seems like this whole thing is starting to wear on him, or it's already worn on him, and he's just like,
yeah,
he wants to be over and done with. He's tired of cooperating. So he says, then he goes up to $2 million, then he goes up to $5 million. He said, I'll give you $5 million if you just handle this situation for me.
He's like, you're going to give me $5 million so you can have this woman killed? And he said, no, for $5 million. You are killing this woman, this person, yourself. So
I don't know.
Arlo, you know, even as fed up with Daryl Zero as he is right now, he's like, no, I'm not taking that money. I'm not killing this person for you.
And then I think I think Stark actually goes like, well, what, maybe I'll just go in this room and see Zero myself. And then that's when Arlo's like, if you go in there, I will shoot you. I will shoot you with my gun.
Yeah. I don't think Arlo even has a gun.
I don't think so either. I think that was a total, which is something else I kind of noticed in the movie. Like when Arlo is talking to Stark, he's like a lot more stern and a lot more kind of not dangerous, but he's a lot more kind of, I guess maybe dangerous looking. Like, you know, he carries himself more rigid. But like when he's with Zero, we see the real him. Like he kind of lets that facade drop, and you know, he has a facade much like Arlo, or much like Daryl Zero has his facade.
Yeah, that's a good observation. Yeah, they are both like he's putting on a different face to the world, and we see that from the opening scene where he's, you know, like talking to the potential client, and he's like, oh, this is how cool and this is how brilliant Daryl Zero is. And then we intercut that with him unloading to his friend Bill. He's like, this is what a nutball this guy I'm working for. let me tell you about this crazy shit. Or when we see him alone with his fiancee, Jess. And it's a really nice performance by Ben Stiller because he plays frustrated and flummoxed really well. But it's a more serious performance. It doesn't really tip over into, you know, like a comedy performance. It's more of a straight-laced performance.
No, so. Absolutely. No, he's really good with roles like that.
Yeah, yeah. So let's see. Meanwhile, Daryl is going out to dinner with Gloria again. They go out to a diner together, and we kind of learn more about them. We learn, like, she's into skydiving.
Mm.
And Daryl doesn't quite really get that at all. He's like, I don't see that. I think because it's just such a loss of control that he can't really relate to the idea of it.
Right. Absolutely. And the fact that she can do something like that is so dangerous.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's somebody who, like, even he says he's like a recluse who stays in and doesn't take chances like that.
She asks him, like, are you close to your family at all? I think he drops that he's from Minnesota originally.
Yes.
And when Gloria goes off to the bathroom for a minute, Daryl has like a sudden flash of inspiration, and he calls Arlo and he says, could a person be considered physical evidence? Ooh. And Arlo like does a quick consult with his friend Bill, his law school friend Bill, and he's like, yeah, I think so. And so Daryl realizes that Gloria is not Cregan's daughter. She's actually Stark's daughter. So, yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, and Clarissa, the murdered woman, she was also a redhead. I think we forgot to mention that.
Right, yeah.
Much, I, like, Gloria as well, much like Stark's masseuse. So, you know, again, red hair, very big with him.
Right. I think it's because, like, when they were having dinner at the diner, the waitress had red hair. And
yes,
Gloria said, like, oh, my mom, my natural birth mom, has, she had red hair like that.
Yeah, and she was like, oh, I always thought I'd grow up to look like that waitress. And that's what gives Daryl the inspiration. Yeah.
Right. So, but the two of them continue to date, and Gloria wants to know more about Zero. She begins to cry. And then
Zero actually opens up?
Yeah. Like, for a minute, I was trying to see, like, oh, is this, like, part of the facade, or is he actually opening up? But I think...
I think he's telling her real shit here.
I do too, because I think the way Bill Pullman played it, like he was trying to tell the audience, no, this isn't like a cover. This is for real.
This woman is getting under his skin.
Yeah.
He confesses. Yeah, he says, like, my father was an evil, abusive man. He killed my mother while she was sleeping, and he was like 13 years old when this happened.
Then he slit his wrists, which was like,
geez. Yeah. And now that's really, I thought that was really interesting because that's another sort of Sherlock Holmes parallel. Mm-hmm. Conan Doyle never really got into Holmes's childhood at all. Like, we meet his brother Mycroft, but we only hear about his family in the vaguest terms.
Right.
But Nicholas Meyer, who you might know from directing Star Trek 2 and 6 and co-writing Star Trek 4. Like, so the even-numbered ones with the original crew. One of his first big things was he wrote a novel called The 7% Solution, which they also made into a movie. And in that movie, it's about, like, Sherlock Holmes teaming up with Sigmund Freud, and Sigmund Freud is curing Holmes of his cocaine addiction. And we find out in there, like, Freud does, like, a read on Sherlock Holmes, and he finds out that Holmes' father murdered his mother. So I'm wondering if that was, like, maybe an inspiration in there. So that's, you know, that was just sort of an interesting backstory to Holmes. And it's, I think it's very interesting that Daryl Zero has a very similar backstory to that version of Holmes. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. But it's interesting. Yeah. But we do see them getting closer and closer. Yeah. Then, you know, they talk some more. Then they both leave the diner. They leave a tip. He leaves the receipt, but then they leave holding hands, and then they go.
But him leaving the receipt is very significant because, like, when he's doing Gloria's taxes, he's talking about, oh yeah, you gotta always save your receipts for everything,
right?
Like, you know, I started doing it. It's just like an unconscious habit now,
right?
And then you know, like, the camera, like, zooms in on the receipt. So we know, like, oh, Daryl is getting so emotionally involved, he is slipping up. You know, it's like he says, you know, passion is the enemy of precision.
Yeah, and the receipt even says receipt in big, bold letters.
I know. To just be ultra sure everyone in the audience gets it. So everyone's like, oh, okay.
This is the receipt.
Yeah. It's the customer copy and everything. It's not like he just left the restaurant copy. It's a customer copy that he's supposed to take with him.
Yeah.
They even talk business, so, you know.
So, you know.
It's just a disaster for his deductions.
Oh, my God. He might have to deal with the H&R Block is going to have a field day with this.
That's right.
You have to deal with the Rhodium 3 deductions.
That's right.
Callback.
And also Daryl sleeps with Gloria.
Yes. They make the beast with two backs.
They get it on. Yeah, they knock boots.
Knock boots while
bump uglies.
Yeah. Rub privates.
Yeah.
Coitus.
Yeah.
They do all that while Nick Cave plays in the background. Real sexy.
Intercourse.
Yes.
Yeah. Dangly parts.
P and the V.
Yeah.
Hot dog down the hallway. Making them bed springs squeak.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, very significant because, like, as Arlo says earlier, he's in his mid-30s. I don't think he's ever kissed a girl. So, you know, he's really, you know, going from 0 to 60 right off the bat here.
Yeah, he's advancing quite well here.
Quite rapidly, yes.
Quite rapidly. So the next day, they're at the gym again?
Yeah.
You know, working out. We also see Stark there, but of course he doesn't know either one of them.
Right.
And then Gloria says, well, I have to go, but I'll see you at my place at 6. And she kisses him goodbye.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Stark has to go and make yet another blackmail payoff. And he says that to Arlo earlier. He's like, it used to be like every few months. Now it's like every few days. So it's like they're increasing in frequency. He's getting really nuts. And it's like 100K each time. It's wild. So
wild, baby. So, yes.
I don't think I could even think of this many places to like have to drop off my blackmail money. Personally.
Yeah, I know. It's like,
I have to think of a dozen different places. Oh my god, no, that seems like work.
Yeah, it's like, all right, well, how's he going to get out there? Like, is there parking?
I have to figure out a route. I have to like look at bus routes. Like, what the hell?
Like, man. What are the hours? Are they going to be open after 6? Or did it close early on Sundays?
You know, I mean, will this particular stall in this particular men's room happen to be free at this time of day?
Yeah, some dude could be blowing it up with his deuces.
Exactly.
You never know. Exactly. It's a whole thing. You don't know.
Somebody had a bad burrito.
Yeah.
There's that whole explosive diarrhea thing going around now. So.
Yeah, exactly. Could get the lettuce poops on it. You never know.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a whole thing. Just hit me up on Venmo.
Yeah, just send me some cryptocurrency or something.
Some NFTs. Those never go out of style.
NFTs. Yeah, those are still great.
Yeah,
right?
The bathing apes or whatever they called.
Right. So this latest payoff location is at a planetarium.
Mm.
And Stark goes in there and he goes into the planetarium. And we see Gloria sitting there in the planetarium. I guess she's waiting to go grab the payment. And Daryl Zero is also there in disguise.
Yes, he has like a goatee and glasses.
Yeah, and I don't think either Stark nor Gloria knows that he's there. And then just as like Stark is about to confront Gloria, I think he has a gun, right?
It looks like, because he looks like he reaches for something for a minute, and even Daryl points it out or notices it, and he's like, oh no.
Yeah.
But then the lights come on, and then Stark and Gloria see each other eye to eye.
Right.
And then Stark goes into cardiac arrest and has like a heart attack.
I think Stark has his heart attack and I think he falls back against the switch. And I think that's what turns the lights on.
Oh, okay.
That's what it is. Yeah.
I thought the lights came on before that. Okay.
I'd have to watch it again, but I think he falls back and he hits something. And I think that was like a light switch.
Oh, I see.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So he has a heart attack, because, you know, just the stress of this, he's getting more and more flustered throughout the course of the movie. And, you know, they're upping the frequency of the blackmail and stuff. He's got a lot going on.
Indeed.
And then Gloria has just kind of this moment of truth and she actually starts to work on him. She saves his life. She like says to the people around, she's like, call 911. She starts performing CPR and all that good stuff. And, you know, this is somebody she has every reason to want dead, but she decides to save his life because she's got to be true to her nature.
Absolutely. So. And she ends up saving his life.
Yeah.
So it's all nice.
And yeah. So, you know, even though this could possibly have horrible consequences for her, because he basically knows she's a blackmailer now.
Right. So,
and they figure out the name on the safety deposit box is Gloria Stark. So it's Gloria's first name and Stark's last name.
Exactly. So Zero figures it all out. He has the epiphany, goes, finds the safety deposit box on the Gloria Starks, finds the roll. He finds the tape, which is actually like a roll of, it's like microfiche or something like that.
I think it was just like an old school audio tape, like you put on an old reel-to-reel tape. Because, you know, remember, this is going back to, I guess, the 70s, at least.
Okay, that makes sense.
So, yeah, so I think it's like, you know, it's like kind of, it's analog, Darren.
All right. I mean, I thought it'd be like a cassette tape or something, but I guess that, I guess the 70s, there were cassette tapes in the 70s, what am I saying?
Yeah, I don't know.
Could have put it.
Maybe it should have been on an 8-track.
Right, that's what I'm talking. Yeah. Now you're on the trolley.
You know, then there's like, you know, a disco hit. And,
yeah.
And some blackmail material. That's the dream, right?
Next up, Disco Duck. But before that, Blackmail Tape, climbing the charts.
So Daryl goes to Gloria's apartment, and Gloria actually calls while he's there.
Right.
And she's fleeing the country. And it's sort of Daryl and Gloria talking to each other, and they're just kind of like confirming what they've figured out about each other. And we have like flashback in there of like how Cragen performed this hit on Clarissa Devereaux. He like shoots her first thing, and then he realizes like, oh, there's a baby in this hotel room.
Yeah, Gloria was there.
Yeah, and they like pushed this bed against the wall to make sort of this makeshift crawl space for her because she didn't have like a crib or anything.
Right.
And then he sees this baby and he has this attack of conscience, I guess. And he's like, I'm going to take care of this baby, even though it has nothing but bad consequences for me, or potentially horrible consequences for him. And then he's like, I have to remove all the signs in this hotel room that there was a baby here at all.
Yeah, and in doing that, he ends up leaving his own fingerprints everywhere, which, you know, of course, like you said, like it's all evidence that he definitely did this. So, he gets arrested immediately, but he gives baby Gloria to his sister to raise and while he's in prison. And as Gloria grows up, when she's of age, that's when Cragen tells him the whole story about, you know, the truth about her mom and his part in it.
So she's been blackmailing Stark for a year, and she only started blackmailing him after she figured out the truth.
Right.
So that's been the whole thing. She's been blackmailing him for a year. The whole key thing was just a coincidence that he happened to lose the key to the safety deposit box.
That is wild. That whole thing was just, that's just a red herring. Don't think too much about that, guys.
Yeah, And Gloria is at the airport because she's like fleeing the country because Gregory Stark is after her now.
Right.
And so she's got to go on the run. She's going to go overseas or wherever. And while she's on the phone with Daryl, he says like, hey, there's this guy at the airport and it's Arlo. Mm. And Arlo is there to give her like fake IDs and airplane tickets so she can like be on the run, stay on the run for as long as possible. And Daryl's like giving her advice. He's like, yeah, stay away from westernized countries. You like keep moving around every couple months, you know, do this, don't do that.
Yeah. Like
sign.
Yeah. Like don't carry too much cash. Never use your real name. Give incorrect information. Basically everything he does whenever he travels anywhere.
Yes. Yeah. And last thing on the phone, she says, I love you, Daryl Zero. So she's figured out his real identity.
What?
And this, of course, parallels one of the most famous moments from the original short story, A Scandal in Bohemia, where, like, Holmes and Watson are coming back to 221B Baker Street, and they're feeling, like, pretty damn smug of themselves. And they're like, hey, we figured out this whole Irene Adler thing. All right, yeah, way to go. High five, buddy. I know it's Victorian England. We don't high five yet. That's how happy we are. High five. And then just then, like, this guy passes by them on the street and says, like, good night, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. And we find out later that was actually Irene Adler in disguise. She, like, disguised herself as a dude and followed them back to Baker Street. And she just sort of says, good night, Mr. Holmes. Oh. As sort of a tip of the hat, fuck you.
Oh, dear. Thing.
And, yeah. And so Holmes, at the end of that story, he figures out, oh, I'm not as clever as I thought I was. This woman was actually cleverer than me.
Cleverer.
And, yeah, so it's a very similar thing to the end of this, where she says, I love you, Daryl Zero. And so we know she's figured it out. We don't know exactly when or how she figured it out, because this is being told from Zero and Arlo's point of view. But,
yeah,
you know, we see kind of hints.
It does. But it's a really good scene, though, like the way she
it is
kind of figured it all out. So,
yeah.
So then that's the case. Zero has named this case the case of the man who got so stressed out over his lost keys that he eventually had a heart attack, and it turned out they were in the sofa all along.
Yes. So Stark gets the tape, the incriminating tape, and his keys back, and Daryl Zero returns the first part of his fee. Right. So they're pretty much just like washing their hands of Gregory Stark. And Stark has gotten everything he wants. You know, he has the evidence. He's responsible for the murder. But they don't give him any information that he could possibly find Gloria.
Yeah, very, very true. Then Zero and Arlo kind of part ways. Mm-hmm. You know, Zero says, well, you know, this job will still be here waiting for you once you realize you can't live without me. We see Arlo got married. And, yeah. You know, Daryl
attends in disguise.
Yes. He's wearing like some white, like sailor outfit or general or outfit or something.
Yeah, I think he's looking like he's supposed to be like working the wedding in some capacity, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So very nice. And then Daryl also attended Victor's funeral as well. And
funeral of the hitman. So
yeah, and he says
there wasn't really anyone else to.
Yeah. I mean, then he says that he never really made any attempt to find Gloria, and he imagines that she's most likely like kind of skydiving or something. And he just remembers her with a lot of fondness. And, you know, she was the most able blackmailer of her time and worthy opponent, greatest ally. And she was the only woman he has ever. The only woman.
Yeah. The only time I ever took leave of my objectivity. Mm. The only woman. And yeah, again, parallel with Skin to Bohemia, because Sherlock Holmes calls Irene Adler the woman. And there's no other story in the Sherlock Holmes canon of 60 stories where Irene Adler comes back or anything. Other authors have brought her back in various ways. Like there's been a whole series of novels about her by, what's her name? Carol Nelson Douglas.
Oh, okay.
She's written like a half dozen or more Irene Adler novels. So, yeah, it's one of the characters that's really captured the imagination of Sherlock Holmes fandom. So this is a really nice updating.
Yeah, story. For sure. Like, I really like this movie quite a bit. Like, I mean, it's a shame more people don't know about it. Like, this movie kind of felt like, I feel like Jake Kasdan was trying to do here what Rian Johnson would go on to do with Benoit Blanc and the Knives Out movie, where like he was trying to create his own little, you know, detective mystery series. And like, you know, like, I feel like he wanted to do like more adventures of Daryl Zero, but like this one just didn't, I don't know. Like maybe the audience just didn't find it or what,
maybe it wasn't promoted well enough.
Yeah.
I
remember that.
But it's a really well done movie. They definitely could have done more with it. You know, the TV series didn't quite go, but he obviously has an interest in the character and his continuing adventures. And I think it's something you could still pick up today. It's like, you know, almost 30 years later, but I think you could still do it, man.
I think so. Yeah.
There's no reason you couldn't have Daryl Zero and Steve Arlo together for like one more adventure.
Yeah. So. I mean, I feel like there's like enough of a cult following for this film out there somewhere that people would still want to be a part of it.
You know, maybe if you kept it low budget or if you did it for like a streaming service or something, it would be fun. Yeah,
I think so. It's a good. But yeah, listeners, check out Zero Effect. If you've never heard of it or this is your first time ever hearing about it, we highly recommend you check it out. It's like
even though we've just spoiled the entire movie.
Yes, even though we did do that. But, you know, hey, man, still watch it. It's great.
Yeah, it is. It is great. I mean, we. Given sort of like a rough sketch of the major plot points, but this is a movie that has a lot of pleasures to it. So yeah, I highly recommend it.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for recommending this film, John, for your birthday, good sir.
Yeah. I enjoy revisiting this one every once in a while. I think it's been about a year and a half since I've seen it last. So I was kind of in the mood to see it again. So, you know, I always love revisiting it every few years.
Okay, very good. And that's our episode, guys. Thanks for listening to the podcast. As always, you could follow us on the Blue Sky at SNL Nerds. You can listen to this madness on our YouTube page. Go to non-productive.com. Donate to our Patreon, all that good stuff. And for me, myself, yeah. and I, you can follow me on all the socials at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible. And you can also buy tickets to my album recording October.
Oh, look at that. I mean, you look. Yeah. Come on. You gotta go see Darren record a full album. If he's ever amused you on this podcast, and I know he has.
I know he has.
He's even funnier on stage.
Yeah, it hasn't all been terrible. I said some funny shit. Yeah.
No, you do say some funny shit. You say some funny shit on a regular basis, sir.
Thank you, sir. And, yeah, so if you're... And
you also say some funny shit on stage.
I do!
Yeah.
So, if you're going to be in New Jersey, October 8th, Newark Culture Center, come out, buy some tickets, come see me. But if you're not around then, you can also see me on September 3rd, that Thursday before Labor Day weekend, because I'll be running the special at QED in Astoria, Queens. It'll be like a rough draft of what the polished version of the special would be. It'd be like the first time me kind of going through the whole thing, working out the kinks and all that jazz. So it'll be a rougher version of the finished version. So go buy tickets for that September 3rd in Astoria, Queens. And you can find all those links to all those tickets on my new website, DarrenCredible.com. All the links are there.
Yeah. So go check that out.
Check it out. And,
I mean, once you're done, check it out, all of Darren's exciting stuff. And checking out his shows, checking out his final recording, checking out his rough show, checking out both of them so you can compare and contrast.
Yes.
Like, I like how you changed the order of this bit to this bit. Yeah. I mean,
yes.
If you're a comedy geek, this is the sort of stuff you live for.
Absolutely. Take all the notes you need, people. I love feedback.
And then once you're done with all that and you just want to decompress a little bit, you can follow me on the socials at Trumbull Comic, T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L, and the word comic. I don't have anything that exciting going on, but... I mean, you can just follow me and be like, hey, wasn't Darren cool when he did this thing? And I'll be like, yes, he was.
Yes. So. Follow Trumbull and talk about me the whole time.
Yes.
That would actually make me pretty happy.
I'm not proud. Yeah. That would make me happy, and then I would gradually become more and more irritated with it. So,
Isn't Darren the coolest? He's swell.
Yes, he is. Yes, he's swell.
He's the best.
He's great.
He's the bee's knees. He's...
I like him too.
He's so funny and handsome. Smells great.
Oh, we've created a monster. He's drunk with power and he hasn't even recorded his specials yet, people.
That's right. Yes. Yes. Yes.
But anyway, we're going to be back next week. We're going to be talking about something else, something exciting. Should we go into what we're talking about next week?
Sure. What did we decide on?
What did we decide on? We spent like, I think, a half hour talking about what we're going to do. We're going to tie in with a movie that by the time you hear this, we'll be in theaters. It's about to open as we're recording this.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Yes. Let's talk about it.
The new Spider-Man movie.
Mm.
I believe that is his name. His name is Spider-Man.
I think it's Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Yeah.
Go, Mr.
Spider-Man, Brand New Day. And we were like, hey. Robert Downey Jr. was on SNL for a season.
Ooh.
Robert Downey Jr. is also in the MCU. He was also in Spider-Man Homecoming. So we are going to do Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yes.
Fuck you. It is an SNL movie.
That's the biggest of reaches we're doing, folks. But whatever. It's our podcast, not yours. We'll do what we want.
RDJ was an SNL cast member. You cannot take that away from him.
That's true.
He's not the most lauded SNL cast member, but damn it, he was a cast member on SNL for one entire season. And he's in the MCU, so we can do an MCU movie if we want to. And we feel like doing an MCU movie.
Let's do it. Yeah.
And
plus, we really just want to see Spider-Man Homecoming again, because that movie was...
Who doesn't?
Come on. The movie was boss.
Yeah. It's a delight.
It's a fantastic film.
Yeah.
Yeah, fun
you,
for...
You know, you got Tom Holland, you got Zendaya, you got Jason Badalon, you got Michael Keaton. Michael Keatoning it up all over the place.
Yeah, he Michael Keaton does some fantastic work in this movie.
He's, I mean, Michael Keaton like just kicks all the ass and just
all of it. Yeah,
all of it. There's no ass left to be kicked.
No, nary an ass around.
It is. They are assless.
Ass?
Yeah, that's like that's why one of the Spider-Men had to wear a fake ass in Spider-Man No Way Home years later.
They are assless chaps.
That's right. And also RDJ and Up the Storm and Marissa Tomei.
Ooh,
as Hot Aunt May. So
hubba hubba.
Am I forgetting anybody? Probably.
Yeah. No, I think that's it.
Yeah. That's it. Those are all the cast members. So anyway, we're going to have fun. We're going to revisit Spider-Man Homecoming to kind of get ready, get pumped for the new Spider-Man movie.
Ooh, pump up the jam. We
probably will have seen by the time we record next week. I don't know.
Oh, for, yeah, I we'll am, see. For sure.
You are for sure.
It's happening.
I'm not sure when I'm going yet, but we'll find out. So. Okay. Anyway, so that's next week. Spider-Man Homecoming. Join us, won't you? But until then...
Nerds out!
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.